My Dear Fiona by Frances Rosenfeld. Chapter 28, The Ghost of Fiona Corrigal. The sunshine was warm and hazy at the equinox, brushing the grassy knolls and the tops of the stones and sparkling on the locks. I know you've been here so many times, Fiona, that's probably why I can't keep away from this place, and here I am again, at the Stones of Stennis, waiting for the equinox like I'm expecting something to happen. Spend enough time at sacred sites and you start believing in their magic. There is a still power in the stones, subtle, like tides, which quietly overtakes you before you take notice, and you find yourself immersed in it, dazzled and bowing to its authority. You came here at sunrise, with Jerun, carrying baskets of honey cakes and root vegetables, hoping to entreat the spirit of Orkney and appease the wrath of Gore Veli, whose fury strips the land bare and disappears whole islands. It's cold already, and you are walking against the wind, wrapping the warm furs tight around your body to keep out the chill. Jerun walks behind you, respectful, and it takes a moment for me to understand when did this role reversal happened, and then I see the signet ring on your finger, your symbol of authority. You are no longer a person, Fiona. You are the seat of power, a keeper of the royal blood your mentor took an oath to honor and defend with her life. There is something very different about you that commands deference, even dressed as you are now, in your day-to-day clothes, and with no insignia of power other than your ring. Do you see her too? Denise whispered in my ear sheepishly. I turned around, surprised. I see them, yes, I nodded. Ah, Betty, she hesitated, is this something we should experience, you think, isn't this? A shared hallucination? I don't know. The problem with impossible things shared with another is you can no longer deny them, and if you can't find a rational explanation for them, then all the things you took for granted in this world become a lot less certain than you thought. Fiona turned around and stared straight at us, and then smiled and nodded, making obvious she could see us too, and I can't help the feeling time collapsed at this spot to allow us to meet, even though we lived 1,000 years apart. I came here to find the bones of a stranger who died centuries before I was born, and instead I found that time is an illusion, one whose artifice we don't have the means to understand. She smiled at me, Denise continued her hushed commentary, like she was at the movies and didn't want to stir shushing from the rest of the audience. I saw. Should we approach her? What makes you think she won't vanish into thin air? Denise, she's not really here. Maybe she is and we're not. How can you tell? My sister's logic humbled me and her comfort with this whole surreal scene ran chills down my spine. Maybe she's a real girl from one of the nearby villages and we're looking like lunatics to her. You should see your face, Ethel, you're white as a sheet. She let go of my arm and said, I'm going to her. Denise, no. I managed to whisper, my voice dry with emotion and apprehension, but there was no holding back Denise, who'd already started running towards the strange girl dressed in furs. The vision disappeared before my sister reached it, and I let out a deep and shaky sigh of relief it didn't take her as well. Are you out of your mind? How do you think I'd be able to look Mom and Dad in the eye again if you disappeared? So, it was for real, Denise continued, excited, completely ignoring my comments. We saw a ghost, Betty Lou. The winds picked up, chiding my sister for her comment. Maybe we should go, I said, watching the storm clouds that started to gather over the lock. Oh, grow up, Ethel, you made me lay down in the dust of human bones and now you're getting squeamish? I want to find out where she came from. Maybe there is something on the spot where she stood. There is nothing, just grass. Say you, come help me figure out where she was when she appeared. She turned towards me, annoyed. Where was it, here? A little to the left, and closer to the stones. Right here, I think, I advanced reluctantly to take the very spot from which Fiona smiled back at me. Somehow, I expected to be whisked away and taken to another time, and that must have been written all over my face, because my sister started laughing heartily. You read too many romance novels, Betty. They're not real, you know. Well, neither was this, I retorted. I stood tall in my spot and felt the silence of the stones wrap around me like the gaze of unseen witnesses judging me, weighing my countenance, questioning whether I'm a worthy descendant of their warrior princess, whether her blood wasn't thinned in my veins by cushy living and social polish. The clouds weighed heavier than lead above the stones now, carried by the winds from all directions, and I worried I might have upset the spirit of the place somehow, by violating the restrictions of time. "Don't move, Betty," Denise whispered, her voice softer than a breath. I froze, wondering who or what was so close to me I couldn't see it. "I want to take a picture of you with the stones. The light is extraordinary." I got instantly aggravated with my sister. How does one not take a vision seriously? One expects a vision from beyond to elicit apprehension or awe, some humbled contemplation of being. Denise wanted to take pictures instead. "What?" She glared at me, annoyed by the disapproving look. "Can you lose that frown? I'm trying to get a nice image, and get your hair out of your eyes." She took the picture and rushed to show it to me. "See? No ghost photography, just you." I was almost disappointed, I have to say, expecting as I was to feel Fiona's white hand on my shoulder at any moment. "I have lived with you in my head for so long, my princess, nothing in your ghostly presence could give me pause." "So, don't tell Mom and Dad?" Denise confirmed. "Not a peep. Do you think we should try to figure out if anybody here experienced something similar? If there is something, I'm sure we'll hear about it at the storytelling festival." Denise was gleeful with anticipation. I let her drive us back while my mind was scattered across the hills, searching for Fiona, wondering what kind of explanation would a scientific mind find for what we had experienced, and if any of it would find a place, even a footnote, in my research. We pride ourselves on our objectivity as long as it doesn't run dissonant with what we're allowed to believe. Whatever doesn't fit in with accepted knowledge gets hidden and experienced privately in silence. The ghost of Fiona Corrigal will not make an appearance in my research study, I'm afraid. How do you deny the sight in front of your eyes, the sight you shared with someone else? How could my sister be so unflappable? She just saw a ghost, and she's planning dinner like nothing happened. "We have to eat, Ethel. Do you think we can find honey cakes around here somewhere? Do you ever think of anything other than food?" "Definitely. I think after we eat I should write down the details, so I don't forget them before I have time to compose the story for the festival." "Denise, I don't think you'll be able to tell a story. The speakers have already been chosen." "That doesn't mean I can't write it, does it? I'll send it to Mom. Maybe she can talk to Aunt Lizzie and get it published." "Didn't we just agree we would not whisper a single word of this to Mom and Dad?" "Silly Ethel. It's fantasy. You have absolutely no imagination, that's your problem. Maybe I should embellish a little, you know, for authenticity." "Yeah, definitely. Authenticity demands you add up stuff we didn't see." "Maybe we didn't," she said, with a chilling lack of interest. "And that's why we don't share experiences that lay outside the accepted norm. Even the most open-minded of us are perfectly content to believe they imagined everything, so they can go back to their familiar understanding of reality with no strings attached."